Welcome to the Fuller Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording, and it is 3:33 p.m. and that is Central Time. Today is July 13th, and I thought today we had some really very interesting action in markets. I thought I'd kick off with the Nasdaq 100. It opened lower, closed higher, but was still down very minimally on the day. So this is on the back of the CPI print, which came in excess of 9%. No sign yet that inflation is peaking. So generally, one would anticipate that the stock market would sell off on that kind of news, but that has not happened. And we have to then think about, well, what exactly is going on? Well, I think the first thing is we've already had a fairly sizable pullback. So the Nasdaq is in the region of the 1,000-day moving average. And we know from history that the region of the 1,000-day moving average is an historical area where, in a secular trend, this is where support should be found. So it's a reasonable area where we might anticipate some people starting to come back in and thinking that this is an ideal buy the dip opportunity. So how do you square that buy the dip opportunity with what's going on in terms of inflation? So we can then think about the 3-month yield. Well, 3-month yields were artificially depressed all the way through May and June because investors were really trying to escape inflationary pressures at the long end of the curve. So anyone who's running a fixed income portfolio and didn't have the opportunity to just sell and get out and move into something else, well, or even to go to cash. A lot of fixed income portfolios aren't allowed to go to cash. Well, then what they would have done is shorten duration. So there was such an exodus out of the long end of the curve, then it artificially depressed yields in June. So even though interest rates were ramping higher, the 3-month yield wasn't really going anywhere. But now, with inflation still not peaking, and Canada today raised rates by a full percent. So it does put on the table the potential that the Federal Reserve will do the same, that they might also raise rates in a couple of weeks' time by 100 basis points. So there's two ways of thinking about that. One is that they're panicking because they want to try and get in front of inflation. But the other is very similar to what the Bank of Canada said, is that they are front-loading their interest rate hikes so that that would essentially then say that the peak in interest rates is being brought forward. Then, if that's the case, then the time when interest rates will start to go back down again is also being brought forward. So we're starting to get this willingness to look through problems in the short term to what the solutions are going to be in the future, and then investing accordingly before the actual problem that has been priced in has actually occurred. Now, this is very emblematic of what's been happening over the last decade, and it's been the right way to think about markets all through that time because we've always had the Federal Reserve ride to the rescue, provide lots of additional liquidity. We've had monetary and fiscal stimulus happening at the same time, and the size of central bank balance sheets has been trending higher for a decade. But it's not trending higher any longer because of the strength of the dollar. Now, the dollar was a little softer for at least a while in here today. And the euro got down to test the parity level. But when we look at the total assets of central banks, it peaked in February at about 33 and a quarter trillion. And now we're down to 30.33. So almost $3 trillion have been wiped off the size of central bank balance sheets, or 10% of global liquidity, give or take, has been taken out of commission. Against that background, it's hardly surprising that we've had a meaningful pullback in risk assets. Now, when we think about the euro, Well, it got all the way down to test the parity level and paused. And considering the fact that we have a short-term oversold condition, it's certainly not at all beyond the bounds of possibility that we get at least some pause and consolidation. And investors who want to buy, they still are willing to believe that we're going to have a soft landing. The challenge with having that view is we just don't know. And it's almost like the triumph of hope over experience because we have a sharply inverted yield curve. It was arguable whether we had an inversion or whether the inversion we had in March really qualified because it only went inverted for a day or two. But now we have the deepest inversion that has been present since the early 2000s. So it's virtually certain that we're going to have a recession. Now, how is that going to be characterized? So obviously, every recession results in lower growth. And the technical definition is two negative quarters, one after the other. Then could we also have an earnings recession? Because earnings haven't really pulled back yet. And when we look at corporate profits, they're still at really elevated levels. So when we think about the corporate profits, and that means earnings and margins, well, this is obviously something that is very much intertwined with the bullishness and the willingness to think that we're going to continue to see a soft landing. But corporate profits went up by nearly 50% in the space of about 2 years, and accelerating at that pace isn't something that's sustainable indefinitely. Even after the big advance we saw from 2008 through to about 2012, well, then it went sideways. Now we had this then enormous move higher following the Trump tax cuts, and then we had the big pullback for the pandemic, and then the incredible advance fueled by massive liquidity provision and essentially helicopter money. When we then think about the difference between the 10-year and the 3-month, this spread has halved since last Friday, and we're now down to 60 basis points. It's also worth, I think, looking at this because not only do we have evidence of these kinds of very swift declines in the past, but it's almost like they're to be expected. In other words, there are going to be times when the 10-year really doesn't go anywhere, and then the 3-month plays really catch up really very, very quickly. And that's pretty much what we're looking at right now. So the 10-year yield is still hovering here around the 3% level. Now it's not pulling back because there's still the prospect of higher interest rates, but it's not rallying either. And I do think that if we're looking at something that's likely to do well from here on, it's probably the long end of the curve because at this tightening financial conditions situation is going to have a knock-on effect for lots of different assets. Then this willingness to look through problems was also evident in gold today. Now, it got down to an area where I think some people will have been thinking that it would be a good time to buy, and it didn't quite get down to 1700. And then it rebounded, but it wasn't able to hold the bounce either. So it's going to have to follow through on the upside in pretty emphatic fashion in order to really signal that we're back in a demand-dominated environment, are that this is more than a very short-term loan. When we think about copper, it's, I think, interesting that it's been so exceptionally weak and was particularly falling quickly from early June until now. Now, it wasn't holding the breakdown to new lows in here today, and it was a little bit steadier. And we still have analysts that are talking about a deficit for the year and this impending massive demand driver for copper. But if we're in an environment where there's a deficit of supply and there's massive demand growth, well, why have prices pulled back so violently this year? Well, we have to then also consider that China represents about more than 50% of all demand for copper, and China's market is in trouble. Growth in China has been about leverage for the last decade, and we've had really profound asset price inflation. We've had a massive run-up in debt. Now we can see that in a large number of cities, there are people that are refusing to pay their mortgages and they're risking forfeiting their deposits. And that's in an environment where prices have fallen for by about 15%. They're lower than at any point in the last 3 years. So we're at the point now where you're starting to get people rebelling against the decline that we've seen in asset prices. Now, this is also occurring during lockdowns, during this very clear effort to keep people in their homes, to stop public protests. So we're at the same time as property prices are falling, there are very strict security protocols and definitely trying to stop people from protesting in a very loud manner. They can't force people to pay their mortgages. And infrastructure development in China is a massive demand growth driver. So the price was a little bit steadier in here today because of Chinese buying. But the big question subsequently is, are we going to see sufficiently large liquidity injections into the Chinese economy to avert a recession? Or are we going to see a continued political willingness to try and depress asset prices and puncture the debt bubble in order to try and make China a healthier economy overall and set it up for the competitive environment that the Communist Party sees itself in over the course of the next couple of decades. It's a, I think, a really significant question, but China has not provided the quantity of liquidity that would normally be associated with its bailout measures from the past, and oil prices are still holding below the $100 level. So I do think that we have this instinct to buy the dip, and that has represented some short-term support for markets, but we have sufficiently large challenges ahead of us that it is, I think, a little bit foolhardy to step in with large purchases. The dollar was weaker initially today, but did not hold the low, and the Federal Reserve is still raising rates faster than the ECB in particular, but most other central banks. New Zealand also raised rates in here today, but they're not trying to compete with the pace of interest rate hikes with as the Federal Reserve is doing. So these are, I think, really significant challenges to puncturing the trends that we have at present. The dollar continues to trend higher, even if it is overbought in the short term. The euro still has significant challenges in front of it. When we think about the commodities that are strengthening, well, then natural gas is Right up there. And European natural gas prices are at new highs. There is this big open question about whether Russia is going to reopen the Nord Stream 1 pipeline after they complete maintenance work. This is the time when maintenance work has happened in the past. But Russia has absolutely no incentive to reopen the pipeline. Europe has told them that they're going to stop buying Russian gas and oil within 6 months. So why on earth would they restart it at in the end of July when they anticipate that Europe is going to stop buying it by the end of December? That just does not make sense. Then when we look at the numbers of how much gas Europe is storing and the impact of the lack of import facilities to increase the quantity of gas that Europe can accept, well, they absolutely need Russia to open that pipeline. And Russia wants to ensure that there's less outside interference in its war effort in Ukraine. So it has a clear incentive to stop Europe from getting the gas it wants to create a political crisis in European countries this winter and bring Europe to the table for negotiations where Russia will then have the opportunity to negotiate from a position of strength. And obviously, this is a massive geopolitical challenge for Europe. It's likely to weigh on European equities for the lengthy, medium term. But European stocks were off their lows in here today as well. And we're really only now just pushing back down into the upper side of the underlying trading range. And it's been an especially volatile trend over the course of the last decade. So we could easily see some buy the dip activity occurring over the next few weeks. But the reality is that Europe has some almost insurmountable challenges in front of it. There's the real possibility that there are going to be a lot of people very cold this winter. I think I've also started to see speculation about warm houses for people who can't afford heating, so that people will be able to go to public warming areas to stay warm over the winter. And Europe does have very cold winters. So this is obviously an exceptionally challenging environment. When we think then about how that is going to play out, well, European markets could really experience some significant stress. We've already seen that we have this tight liquidity environment in Europe. We have a tight liquidity environment in the USA. And there isn't nearly as much liquidity being provided in China as is required. So global liquidity continues to contract. We've seen the fact that central bank balance sheets have contracted by 3 trillion. And then we can look at the global deficit spending measure, and it's currently sitting at about 1.7 trillion. So, and I'm not entirely sure why it's not drawing the chart, but that is down from 2.5 trillion in most of 2021. So not only are we seeing monetary tightening, but we're also seeing fiscal tightening. And this is going to start weighing on corporate profits. So I don't believe that we're at the bottom of this negative period for markets yet. I suspect that we're going to see significant weakness, additional weakness in the commodity complex. And wheat has pulled back from 1300 to 800. And this is irrespective of the fact that Ukraine's supply is still being withheld from the market. So, one of the most important things is that Russia's ability to export commodities hasn't really changed. They've successfully found additional supply routes for their oil. Nothing has happened to impede Russia's harvest for wheat, so prices are starting to come back down. And this is very much in tune with what we would anticipate from a recession, that commodity prices would start to come back down, that interest rate hikes will curtail risk appetites, that we'll see significant challenges starting to come through in terms of asset prices. I think it's also noteworthy that Bitcoin was on the cusp of breaking lower in here today, but then was able to finish in positive territory. It's still very much in a ranging environment. The Mt. Gox liquidator is likely to make additional supply available to the investors that had their Bitcoin stolen 7 years ago, and that might easily happen in August. So that's a significant slug of additional supply that could potentially come onto the market. And if we're still in an environment where there is tight global liquidity, then that's not going to be beneficial for Bitcoin. But the fact that it is still ranging and that it hasn't broken down yet is going to be at least some comfort for investors that we're more in a rangy environment and that a lot of bad news has already been priced in. When we think about the biotech sector, it's still rebounding and it has broken the sequence of lower rally highs. So we're seeing certainly an unwinding of the oversold condition relative to the 1,000-day and the 200-day moving averages. We've also seen that some of the oncology companies have begun to attract more attention, and they've also been exceptionally oversold over the course of the last 2 years. So it's not like there isn't some opportunity within the technology sector. Even the ARK Innovation ETF hasn't been making new lows. It's mostly been going sideways now for the last 2 months. So I think there's a lot of the more speculative portion of the market has priced in a lot of bad news already. That doesn't mean that we're going to see substantial rebounds until we start to see more liquidity being made available. But at least this isn't the epicenter of risk any longer, but rather that the more high-flying portion of the market is going to be more susceptible to margin compression. And that's certainly relevant for a company like Apple. So the share is now coming back into the region of the 200-day moving average. But this is a very clear break of trend. It's a massive reaction against the prevailing trend. Then we get a period of right-hand extension, or what might also be considered as this first step below the peak, which is exactly what we're getting right now. But Apple could, I think at the very minimum, we'll have to sustain a move back above the trend mean to signal a return to demand dominance. And one thing that I think is particularly interesting is demand for puts has largely been extinguished, or because look at these prices. So certainly there's a lot of volume. And they're exceptionally liquid, there's no question of that. But downside protection against Apple is really cheap. And the further out you go, you can really get cheap exposure in terms of particularly if one is to go out of the money. So there is the clear opportunity to protect oneself from downside by just buying way out of the money put options on something like Apple, because this is a share that has a long history of reversions to the 1,000-day moving average, and at the moment it is $40 above the 1,000-day moving average, or at least $34 above the 1,000-day moving average. So it could easily come back towards the $100 level, and then it would only be reverting to the mean. Still think that investors aren't quite yet willing to give the benefit of the doubt to the fact that we're quite likely already in a recession. But they're still hoping that the Federal Reserve is going to ride to the rescue any day now. And we haven't seen an uptick in unemployment. We haven't seen margin compression. We haven't seen negative guidance coming through from companies. So we haven't had any of the ill effects of a recession just yet, and yet investors are willing to give the benefit of the doubt that it's going to be very short-lived. Well, potentially that is the case. I would say that it's more likely than not that we're going to have short recessions that might last for a few quarters, and then we're going to have really substantial bull markets subsequently, but that we're going to have short cycles rather than the decade-long expansions that we've had for the last 20 years. I think it's unlikely that we're going to have those kinds of long bull markets in the next decade, but rather we're going to have these big moves on the upside and big moves on the downside and exceptionally volatile conditions. And we also have this, I think, significant event over the next decade of the baby boomer generation retiring. There's going to be fewer workers. And this is also occurring at a time when there is a lot less tolerance for immigrants in a large number of countries. So you have large numbers of people retiring and fewer people coming into the workforce. So that's going to push up wages. So the potential is that we're still in a longer term inflationary environment, and that can still be punctuated by recessions, but that wage demand growth is likely to persist. So it does suggest that we are just in a new market environment. And I think with that, I'll leave you for today and wish all the best to all of you.